financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Right? It's a lot easier to get people on the same page when they're able to understand their own values. And then, because people often find we do have overlapping values, even though we hate each other right now. reason, and there are often some shared values.
That sounds a lot like the political argument you brought up earlier. Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you this morning?
I'm doing really good. And this week we have another guest.
We do. Today we're joined by somebody whose work has to do with what I call that love-hate relationship with money. Joyce Labaugh is a licensed therapist, a former CFP, that's Certified Financial Planner to the rest of us, and the creator of something called Relational Wealth Framework. She's helped ultra-high net worth families and everyday folks to understand their emotional root of the financial decisions they make. And she describes her work as living at the intersection of wealth, well-being, and impact. So we're really glad she's here with us today. So welcome to the show, Joy.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate you all having me.
Our pleasure. I'd like to start in right at the heart of it and say, what the heck is Relational Wealth Framework? Can you explain what that means and what prompted you to create that?
Absolutely. So it's really about our relationship with money, realizing that for all of us, money has more meaning than just currency. Yes, it allows us to buy food and pay our bills, and also it means so much more. And yet many times we don't really understand the meaning that money has to us. And that's what can then lead to all of this friction that we might feel internally about money, as well as externally in relationship with other humans, be it a partner, a child, a parent, a work colleague. Money is involved in so many of our relationships in life. I'm really fascinated by this because as a financial planner, I worked with people who had lots of money and yet were really unhappy. They would have, I'd see the way money would just blow up relationships in their life. As a therapist, I wasn't expecting to talk about money, and yet money would come up. And so I realized there's really this opportunity to focus on the intersection of the way money and emotions, how it impacts us and our relationships with others. There's an opportunity to focus on this and help people understand really what money means to them and how they can then bring it in alignment with their values so that they can live a life that is peaceful, that is connected, that has meaningful impact and allows them to leave a legacy.
When you say help them align that with their values, can you give me some examples?
So I'm going to sort of amalgamate different situations so that nothing's identifiable. So one example would be someone who is very successful. They built a business that was worth a lot of money. And they woke up, though, and realized their relationships were in shambles. And they were in the middle of getting a divorce. And they realized, they started to question, well, am I actually successful? I have 8-9 figures in wealth, and yet no one is still in my life if I'm not paying them. Mm-hmm. And so that would be an example of where they're starting to realize their values. They actually do value relationships, but they're not living their life like that. Right? They're investing everything in building financial success at the expense of relationships. And so with folks like that, then helping them understand these values and untangle what's keeping them from actually living their life in alignment with the way they want to, and then they can bring it in alignment, repair relationships, and actually use their wealth to really bring to life their values. So that, because wealth can be a great tool for investing in relationships, can also destroy relationships, right? Depends on how we use it. So I would give that as an example.
That's a great example. Actually, we talk about financial stress, and it's often not really about the money, the actual money itself, right?
Absolutely. Right. I mean, I feel like there's an arc people go through depending on where they are on the socioeconomic scale. When they don't have much money, we see money as, wow, money will solve all my problems. And then when you have money, you realize, okay, it solved some problems, but it also created a whole new set of problems. And so really, money isn't so much the problem as much as how we relate to it, the meaning we assign to it, and then the way that meaning influences our behavior.
I couldn't agree with you more. In talking about how people with, great wealth and people with no money often experience the very similar kind of emotional stress. And you do think I've been in both places, right? When you have no money, you think, man, if I just could get to this level where I could pay my bills and not stress about it, life would be good. Do you find a difference in teaching young people about money? And do you work with many young people now?
Yeah, there does seem like there are some generational values around money where that influence people's relationship with money. Because let's be honest, we have all these cultural influences that impact how we think about money, as well as family influences and a lot of things that influence our ideas around money and relationship with money. And I do think that there are generational aspects as well. I mean, think back to, World War II, the greatest generation. Right? Their attitudes were toward money were like frugal. And then as we advance different generations, there are different ideas around it. And I think we're starting to see now the younger generation is rethinking their relationship with money in ways that are sometimes uncomfortable for older generations. And yet, what I really try to encourage people is that there isn't a right or wrong way to think about money. And it's not like there are good and bad beliefs around money. It's more about understanding what your values are and what works for you. And then how do you bring your money in alignment with your values? Now, I really do believe that as we help people explore their relationship with money and bring their life in alignment with this, then we do see transformation that people have experienced less stress, they've experienced more connection in their relationships. And there's like a ripple effect as you transform one person's relationship with money, this ripple effect that goes out and impacts the other people in their life, their community, and even the broader world.
What I find is that most couples, maybe it's the opposites attract thing. I don't know. You're probably going to be able to tell us. But most couples, one person is sort of the steward of household finances. They're the one who gets the bills and makes sure the kids can go to soccer camp and they get the groceries done, et cetera. And the other person is usually more content to let one person do that. And they maybe earn more money or hand over a paycheck, or they contribute in some other way to the marriage. They see their value as something different in that partnership. And everything seems okay as long as there is enough money. But when a stressor is introduced, they go to the other partner and they say, oh my gosh, we need to talk about money. And the sparks just fly. And that's when it gets really ugly because the person who's been sort of not participating can't solve it either. And they're coming from behind. They have no idea what the situation is like. And the fixer is feeling, I think, and again, I'm going to defer to you, but I think the fixer is feeling like, wait a minute, this was part of my value in the relationship, and I'm now failing at it for some reason. And worse, I have to come clean and talk to my partner about it. Can you tell me if I'm close and why this happens?
I definitely see that dynamic. And what's really interesting about it is, and see other dynamics in partnerships as well, right? Money is a really hot one though. And in the dynamic that you describe, a lot of times what's happening for the person who's the fixer is shame. That's their job, that's the value they bring to the relationship is shame. And when this problem comes up and they can't solve it, they feel this shame. And humans go to enormous lengths to avoid feeling shame. It's a very powerful emotion. And so, they're feeling shame, they may not recognize it, they may not be able to identify it. And so there are all these other feelings that are coming into play to distract them from that. And that's then what can often lead to the tension, the friction, the fight. And so then you have the person who's not been as involved in the money. There's now this problem. This can often bring up shame in them as well, of like, well, I don't know how to fix this. And I don't know what's been happening with the money. Should I have been? Am I a bad person because I did delegate this? And again, we don't like feeling shame. So then these other emotions can come in, and that's where the accusing can come in about like, well, you said you were going to handle it. And I was like, well, I was trying, right? And that's how you then get into like the fights are often more surface level emotions, and underneath, many times, are two people who are both scared and dealing with shame. And it's really hard to face that within themselves, much less reveal that to their partner. And so the fight isn't usually actually about money. It's actually about I'm afraid and I'm ashamed and I don't know how to be with these emotions.
Yeah. And they often don't have the skill set to solve the problem. I mean, we're not educating people about money in the way that we should. And what are the top three causes of divorce? Right? Money, infidelity, and sloppiness. Pick up your socks, right? So, yeah, Jess, will you weigh in on this? What are your thoughts?
Just going back to something you said in the beginning, I don't know if you guys know who Dax Shepard is. He has a podcast and he talks about this. He said, he grew up in Detroit and he thought like all his problems would be solved if he just got money, And so eventually he got like a big paycheck for a movie, was on the set, had a bunch of money, and still felt like the lowest he'd ever felt. But the thing that I think is interesting that he said that you guys didn't mention, which I love, is that he was lucky enough to find that out for himself. Like, you don't believe that. Like, I hear what you guys are saying, but when you don't have money and you hear someone say, well, they've got other problems, no one cares, I think. So it was interesting that I just liked what he had to say about it, that he was lucky enough to find out he had both the poor and the rich side of it. And
Can I add on to that?
Yes, of course.
So what's something that's really been interesting about my experience, I was born into a family that was quite poor. And then when I became a financial advisor and I was working for very well with and for very wealthy people, getting to see these vast sums of wealth, I call it being a class traveler because you're traveling between classes and you get sometimes an outsider's perspective that you can see things maybe a little bit differently than when you grow up in it. And it is really interesting what you talk about, right? That it sometimes is hard to believe. Like, what do you mean these are problems? I remember the first time when a client was complaining to me about the $600,000 tax bill they needed to pay. And I was just like, this is a great problem to have. But that's from, my perspective coming from someone who was born into poverty. Yet when you put yourself in the shoes of people who are in that situation, it's wait, I've worked really hard for this money. Now I have to pay it, and it's being used maybe in ways that I don't agree with, but I don't have choice in that. And so there is this feeling of sometimes there's a feeling of like out of control that I don't get to control this. I worked hard for this money, I don't get to control it. And that can be really incredibly uncomfortable for people. And even like the values misalignment of, I mean, I don't know anyone who agrees 100% with how the government spends money. So, like, everyone I know has some beef with where their taxes are paid, regardless of which side it is, right? And so, for some people, there's a really intense conflict about that, and that they feel really uncomfortable with that. And so, again, yes, I understand when we don't have money. It's like, again, I would love to have that problem. Yes, but it is not as easy a problem as you may think, or when you feel like everyone in your life sees you as an ATM. Like, who wants that? Like, how can you really trust relationships when you're like, is it me or is it my money that they are want to be friends with?
Yeah, I
But so you'd have
remember.
enough money to pay a therapist then. Otherwise, you're worried if your lights are getting turned off.
But I agree. Problems are problems. It doesn't matter what level of money you have. I mean, some people right now with a lot of money are just worried about are they losing their money, right? What's happening, or is it doing really well and they don't know why? I mean, there's so many things. Our relationship with money is a difficult one, and as I said, it may be a love-hate relationship. But I'd love to get a lot more information from you if you'll share it with us, Joy. We must be at break time, I think.
We are. Can I get your phone number for you, Francis?
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rahm on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess.
We're back with another great guest. Yeah, first time this time.
We're back with Joyce Labaugh, founder of or creator of Relational Wealth Framework. I just love that title. I mean, it's pretty descriptive in itself. But we're talking about the relationship that we have with money. It might be a time for me to point out that Joy is not selling you an investment. She's not doing that work. She's working as a counselor, right, as a therapist, to help people align their wealth with their values, which, you know, is not something most people talk about. What do they talk about? How do I make more money? Or I don't have enough to pay my bills. What do I do to fix that? Or I got a guy, he's really great. He does great in the market for me. Okay, but what does that mean in your real life? So you work with couples and families often, Joy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Can I ask you, when it comes to values, how do you think hidden beliefs come up, they show up in relationships?
Well, you see this a lot, like in couples, for example, where there's a spender and a saver, and they love to demonize each other, right? The one who spends is like, oh, that tight wad, they won't let us spend money. And then the savers, you know, can't stand the spending ways. You're going to make us bankrupt. And so you see this where you end up at odds with each other. But when you really get into understanding people's values, there you can see that they each are bringing value to the relationship, right? Many times the spender, when you get down to the root of it, this is a way of bringing joy into their life collectively. And it's a way of bringing newness into the relationship, which brings the dopamine hit, which is allow you to feel like you're in love with each other. And the saver is bringing stability and security and safety to the relationship. So when you can get to these underlying values, then it makes it a lot easier to be able to appreciate what the other is bringing and actually get to a place of collaboration, right? So you're shifting from, we hate each other to, oh, wait, we both are playing a really important role here. And yes, sometimes I feel irritated and I still love you and appreciate you for the way you're helping our relationship and you're investing in our relationship and financial future together.
I have a quick question for either of you, actually. Do you ever recommend, because it seems like it would be easier, that couples just keep their money separate? Because then if you have a saver or a spend, like, they can do what they want. You're not mad that somebody spent $200 on video games and they're not mad you went shopping. You know what I mean? Or is that just a quick fix and not really an answer to the problem?
I think we should both weigh in on that. What do you think, Joy?
Well, I do think that there is value in not making a default assumption of one way of handling money. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of value in getting clear, like before you merge finances, get really clear about what money means to each of you, what you want money to be like in your relationship. And then that helps you determine, do we actually want to merge finances? Do we want to keep them separate? Or do we want some sort of hybrid, right? Where some couples would be like, we have our own money and we've aligned on how much each person contributes to a joint account that we use for our shared expenses. So being real intentional about it helps avoid a lifetime of fights.
Yeah, I have to agree 100%. Sometimes people will come to me and say, well, we keep our money very separate and I only want to talk about my debt. But my answer is sometimes a little bit different. First of all, if it's not broken, don't fix it. If this is working for you already, let's build on that. Okay, we don't want to just start from scratch with something that might not work for you. But I do tend to explore more the reasons why they're doing that. Is it a trust factor? Is it that, you know, he's never met a loan he didn't like, and I'm not going down the rabbit hole with him? Or is it that, you know, she's got a shopping problem? I'm being very, you know, gender specific here. I don't mean to be, but it could be either way, that one partner doesn't trust what the other partner will do with money. And I tend to try and talk to partners about this in a way that, you know, look, you married, you came together, or you're partnered together in many ways. You make your decisions about rearing children, about your job changes, all of that together. But when it comes to money, you keep it very separate. Let's figure out why you're keeping it separate and then decide if that is in fact the most useful and productive way for you to move forward, or where we usually land is right what Joy said, some blend of it. Like, okay, so You each have debt. Rather than doing this separately, if we put it in the system together, as long as you're willing to work on this together, look how much faster you get out. I liken it, when it comes to debt at least, to if I put one of you in a hole and you're jumping, jumping, trying to get out of the hole, and you're not getting very far. If I put the other one down in the hole, you can pull each other up and get out of the hole together. And for debt in our system, anyway, it's not always how it works, but within our system, when you're managing debt, working together almost always will speed things up and you'll both come to a happier place. And when you get both partners on the same page, they're happier in general. So whatever it takes to do that, whether it's to separate some money and put some money together, whatever it takes to do that, I am in favor of, for sure.
Okay, interesting.
Great question, Jess.
And what you said about getting them on the same page, that gets the values piece, right? It's a
Yes.
lot easier to get people on the same page when they're able to understand their own values. And then, because people often find we do have overlapping values, even though we hate each other right now. We got a reason, and there are often some shared values.
That sounds a lot like the political argument you brought up earlier, where, the one thing we have pulling us together is that nobody's happy about government in general. It doesn't matter who is there. Nobody's ever completely happy about it. And we can commiserate together. And it usually has something to do with money, how the government's spending our money, or what we can't get, or potholes in the road that cost so much money to fix, right? It's very interesting. I asked a question off the cuff that many people responded to in a bit of a survey that said, where do you think people turn for advice, for financial advice? And you had a very interesting answer that included all kinds of things, spiritual leaders and hairdressers. Can you elaborate on that? Where do you think people turn to for advice about money?
Yes. So when I worked for Vanguard, I led some research under trying to understand referrals, what leads people to give referrals for advisors, and just understand it. And through we did a bunch of ethnographic research with people and I learned things I was very surprised by. And people have trusted advisors, and that can vary dramatically by person as to who falls in the category of trusted advisor. And they tend to go to these trusted advisors for advice on many topics, including financial advice, like, hey, I need a financial person. Like, who should I go to? And hairdressers came up way higher than I would have thought as the go-to. Yes, and it blew my mind.
Well, I think that might have something to do with trust.
Yes.
When, I mean, those of us who go and have our hair done, we know, right? If you love your hairdresser and you trust them with your hair, I know it seems like a trivial thing if you don't have problems with your hair, but when you trust your hairdresser, you might assign some level of trust to them that is outside of their field of expertise.
And there's also a dynamic of they see you at your worst. And so there's an element of to that of trust, right? Who can you trust to see you not being perfect and polished and all pulled together? And that's what really is really where we feel a connection, a deep connection with people is this is someone that I can show up for who I really am. That's what leads to trust.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Certainly that feeling of nakedness or exposure is very threatening to people. Which leads me to ask you, what do you think makes it so difficult for people to reach out for help, even when they really, really need it?
Shame. I mentioned earlier that shame is a really powerful emotion, and we go to great lengths to avoid it. And people will go to extreme behavior to avoid feeling shame. And so even when we need help, the idea of facing this big feeling of shame that we have will sometimes prevent people from reaching out, unfortunately.
So that being said, Joy, what financial behavior do you think is at the top of the list for sabotaging people's sense of peace, if you will?
Honestly, it is shaming themselves.
Shame, shame, shame. It's
Yeah.
all shame.
Well, I mean, really, I think it is because if people, you see this, Francis, you've talked to a lot of people and you see that everyone deals with these problems. You're not alone. You're feeling scared. You're not alone. Everyone's feeling scared, right? You're feeling all these feelings that you have. You're not the only person to feel this way. And yet we think that we are, and we think there's something wrong with us because we're afraid, we're nervous, we're angry, whatever these feelings may be. And we can't tolerate that in ourselves. So what I would say for folks who want to start a shift within themselves is, so what if it is true that you are not great with money, or that you don't know anything about investing, right? Okay, you're not alone. There are a lot of
Right.
people in that same boat. So that
That's
first
right.
piece of just like accepting the reality of where you are, that is the very first step you need to be able to start to take action and be end up in a better place.
Yeah, I absolutely think you're right about that. You have to face it. I tell people, just when you're looking at risk of exposure or risk of anything, just decide what's the worst thing that can happen to you. And if you're okay with that, go ahead. Take that step. How do you think people can begin to uncover their own emotional relationship with money? Is there a question or an exercise that you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So something I encourage folks to do is just like go to a quiet place and maybe close your eyes and imagine in your mind a room. There's a chair in that room. You're outside the room. There's a window. You're looking in. And then imagine that there's a pile of money on that chair. And just notice, what do you feel coming up inside of you as you see that pile of money? Maybe you feel excited. Maybe you feel anxious, whatever that may be. Just notice it. And then ask that feeling, okay, I see you. Step aside, if you will. Focus on the money again. Notice what else you feel. You can keep doing this and you'll start to identify the feelings that money brings up in you. And then, like that exercise alone is like, okay, you learn you feel excited, you feel afraid. Maybe there's some other things as well. What was this? We'll go with those two. Then you can start to, when you're engaging with money, whether you have to have a money conversation, you need to balance your checkbook, or a bill comes in the mail, check in. Do I feel, where's that feeling of excitement? Where's that feeling of fear? And you'll start to notice the way these weave through your life around money. And again, this is just bringing awareness to and accepting that that starts to transform the relationship with money. There's more you can do beyond that, but that's a really helpful first step that you can do on your own to start to better understand your relationship with money, that it's in the conscious realm so that you can see it and be with it.
I love that you said that. We're going to run out of time, of course, if we haven't already, but I just want to ask you one last thing. For somebody who's feeling overwhelmed, not by the math, but by fear, guilt, or shame, is what you just said their first step? Should they try that first, or is there something else you'd recommend?
For someone who's really feeling overwhelmed, that might be a bit too much for them to do on their own. If they're really deeply feeling overwhelmed, I would say reach out to someone that you trust and that can hold you with compassion, and just someone that you trust, let them know you're feeling overwhelmed and let them just be with you in that. And that it can really help to create a little more space within yourself to be with these feelings of overwhelm that you're encountering.
I
And we
think
are
it's
out of time, but do you have a website, Joy, that we could get? Yes, joyslayball.com, Joy, and then Slayball is smiles like a big, awful, ugly groundhog.
Very cute, very cute.
Francis, can we get your phone number?
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can always go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you. This was fun.
Thanks, Joy.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing good, and I see that we have a guest today.
We do have a guest today. Our guest today joins us from the UK and London, England, of course, right? And Wall Street. So he's someone who's helping to make investing more approachable for our next generation, which of course I love. Joe Pack is our guest today, and he grew up in a small town in Washington State, worked his way into a career in Wall Street and London, and now he's using that experience to give college students a major leg up, if you will, in financial literacy in what I think is a very interesting way.
I'm still hoping there's a British accent. Is there a British accent?
There
No.
is not. But
Oh.
thanks for having me on.
You
I'll work on it. But I, grew up in Washington State, so no
know.
British
All right,
accent.
all right.
So I just want to say, Joe's platform is called Tick Up, not Uptick, folks. Tick Up.
Take that.
Okay, very clever. Launching what is poised to be the largest stock picking competition for college students, and we'll talk more about how it might expand that in the country today. So, how did this get on our financial fitness radar? Because it's not just about bragging rights. It's actually offering a $50,000 grand prize.
Wow.
And real world experience that could change the financial future of the participants. So, welcome, Joe Pack. I can't wait to hear this story.
Thanks for having me on, Francis.
You're welcome. Do you mind if we start with your own story? You grew up in this town in Washington, and you say that investing helped you, your family in some way?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up in Richland, Washington, which is near where the Hanford site is, so one of these nuclear projects that they had back in the day. From there, I ended up going to Duke, and while I was at Duke, I started getting into the world of investing, and I really had, really no idea or resources at the time. I would try to find things online, but I went from, doing anything from penny stocks to, currency trading, and honestly, losing most of my money along the way. There were definitely times where I felt that I had an edge, but then, things like taking too much leverage and too much risk, which I think as a young college student, you're just prone to do. I learned, lessons pretty much the hard way. I think one of the biggest wake-up calls was when I lost the money that I had saved up to go on spring break, and I had to borrow it from a friend's family. So I think these lessons that I learned early on were very impactful. And I then started to change the way that I approached investing. I started to become more disciplined, using leverage in a more responsible way, and sometimes, not needing to. And that led me to, getting a job on Wall Street. I actually ended up starting off as what they call a rates derivatives options trader. So this was, derivatives on derivatives, and it was a world that was, fairly unknown to me at the time, just trading stocks and currencies, things that are, quite more well known. And it went from there. I think I had a natural tenacity for it, and I ended up taking a job over in London and running some portfolios over here, both on the bond side as well as macro fund management. And I guess 8 years later, having been in London, I decided to leave and start TickUp. So it's been quite an interesting journey.
It's amazing. I read that you said that investing helped get your family out of debt. Are you willing to
Yeah.
talk about that?
I mean, I think it's one of those things that trading, both as a career and as a, personal investor, has given me the ability to help pay off, not only my student loans, but also loans that my family has taken on to help support me to go to college. I mean, university in the US now is absolutely crazy. I believe Duke's tuition is, over 60K per year for 4 years. That's an incredible amount that, unless, you're managing your money wisely, it's almost impossible to think of the career path that, you're paying that off within a reasonable amount of time. So I think it takes a lot of discipline. And also, you have to take selective risks. I think investing does involve risks, but at the same time, you can do it in a measured way. And over the long term, it works out if you're smart and diligent about it.
Yeah, I want to take the second to caution people just because I'm here saying, did investing help your family get out of debt? Remember that Joe just said he lost all his money and had to borrow from his friend's family to go on spring break. So, yes, you can invest and yes, you can do it wisely, but you need the kind of help that you get from a professional. And that's why Joe's here today talking to us.
Definitely.
I think a lot of people would maybe hear your story. You know, I grew up in Washington State, and then I went to Duke University, and then I invested on, got a job on Wall Street, and then I was in London. And they may be thinking that you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth, but not the case, right?
No, definitely not. I think I was fortunate where I had really devoted parents who really supported me on every step of the way. I think financially, it's not like we were anything apart from middle class. My dad used to actually drive me, and my mom as well, would drive me 4 hours one way to Seattle and 4 hours back. So 8 hours round trip twice a week so that I could play on the best soccer team in the state. And that's actually what helped get me into Duke, was being scouted by the Duke soccer coach. So it was by no means an easy journey. And obviously from Duke, I was on my own. I think I had to navigate, you know, the world of investing and finance. I think I saw a lot of my peers who had lots of family friends, as well as their own parents who were involved in the financial industry and knew how to prepare for interviews and all these things. And I really had to find my own way in terms of looking up resources and trying to network and getting my way there. And ultimately, it was the mix of someone who also had a passion for soccer and one of my econ professors who had a soft spot for me that helped me land my first role. So it wasn't a smooth path by any means. I mean, I think when I moved to London initially, it was, you know, to take a risk on a role. So I think these things ended up all coming together, but by no means would I say it was a silver spoon experience.
Yeah. You know, thank you. We have a guest who comes on periodically named the sports doctor, Dr. Bob Weil, and we always end up, we never mean it, but we never intend it, but we always end up in some show talking about for parents, don't just assume that your kid is going to go get a full ride on a scholarship because they were a great soccer player, right? But in your case, it happened. So it does happen that you can win yeah. these games this way, right? No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wasn't actually on a full ride. I did get a scholarship, but the full rides are, you know, some of the most talented people you'll ever come across. One of my best friends who was on a full ride ended up being the number one draft in the MLS. So the talent that you're competing with at these levels is very intense. And I mean, being able to drive, you know, 8 hours round trip to get to a practice, it's not for everyone. Like, I can't imagine myself working now and being able to do that. I think I was fortunate my parents were in a place where they could do that and take turns. But it's not an easy journey to bank on, you know, the sports scholarship.
Man, we're just on the other side of Mother's Day, and it's a good time to just give a nod to both parents. You know, any parent yeah. who is raising a child who is doing what truly must be the hardest job in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
My hat is off to them, and I'm sure that they're very proud of you and that you love them dearly. So obviously your personal experience has helped shape the way that you built TickUp, right?
Yeah.
We're definitely going to talk about this competition, by the way, folks. If you think I'm just getting Joe's story, it's coming. But I like to get some background on this. Like, so based on your personal experience and your experience now, right,
yeah.
earlier and now, what do you think is missing in the way that young people are taught about investing today? What's broken, and how does TickUp aim to fix that?
I think what's broken is, one, the ability to be patient. I think people are looking for a quick fix. I think people want an instant solution to something that, if you're doing it properly with discipline, takes time. And part of that time is putting in the effort to learn. And what I find a lot is that a platform for the younger generation, it needs to be engaging. I mean, you're competing with, you know, Instagram and TikTok. If you're not entertaining, you're not going to win out. Like, think about how Duolingo is so popular now compared to every other language learning tool that was there beforehand. It's because they've made it fun.
Yeah.
And what we aim then to do with TickUp is be engaging, but also deliver to people the route to learning. So, you know, the data that's behind it and being able to explain why this is important. I think being able to combine both the educational element with an engaging platform is the way to go, and it's the way to reach the younger generation.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Without getting too deeply into it, I guess, I'd love to ask you, how your platform maybe uses AI or the technology today, along with a humanistic approach to accomplish that. How do you get people? We deal with this all the time. How do you make money fun? And investing is certainly more fun than managing debt, but we're doing, I think you and I are doing similar things in gamifying what we've got in order to hold them. So can you, without giving away any of your trade secrets, of course, can you tell us a little bit about how you feel about that, how you think about it?
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about how we incorporate AI into the platform. So AI is used in a few different ways. So one is we learn from your interests what sort of thing piques your curiosity. So the way that we go about TickUp is we present to you stocks in a swipeable format. We find that that's an engaging way, and we find that that reduces choice paralysis. When you say, what should I invest in, or how should I even, start looking at, stock or, indices, where do I even begin? I think presenting someone with one question at a time, which is, this one card, one stock, would you be interested in this, and swiping left to pass or right to save it, allows you to reduce this, thousands and thousands of stocks to this one question. Is this interesting to you or not?
Yeah. Right. The big list, the overwhelming lists. Sure.
Exactly. So first on this card, what we've done is we've mimicked what they call a Wikipedia hole. Do you know what a Wikipedia hole is?
I'm going to let you explain it. Thank you.
So it's where you just, you start reading and you end up clicking on something else that's related, and you just get so interested in it that you go deeper into the topic because your curiosity naturally takes you there. I think what we've done is we've looked to replicate that with a one touch button on the card that allows you to research with the backing of AI who takes all this information. And we've created this kind of tree of questions that gives you natural follow-up questions that might interest you. So thinking about, tell me about some of the risks and industry trends related to this company. And then if the company, for example, is like Duolingo, then you can talk about, what's going on in the educational technology space. And you can go deeper into that and be like, how is AI being used in the educational tech space? So there's this tree that you can go down and you can learn. And we learn from your behavior what it is that you're interested in. So then as you go through all the data, if you decide to swipe left and you decide to pass, we know you're not interested in this sort of thing. And if you go right, we know that you are interested in it. So we learn from that. And that learning takes time. So we have a machine learner, our CTO, who is brilliant. He went to MIT and he specializes in this. And we are able to then better present to you things that that you may think are interesting. And then we allow you to be able to view the fundamentals that support or disprove, an investment thesis for that. Even if you're new to investing, it allows you to start getting a sense of what do people pay attention to and what's important. Where else we use AI is we use it to summarize large pieces of information. So if we think about like an earnings call can last an hour. It's very tough for you to carve that out of your time. So we use AI to help summarize those earnings call into pros and cons that came out of this meeting and what is the important information that I need to know. So there's different ways that we're using that to really condense down large amounts of data to really streamline for you, someone that's very busy but is interested in a way to be able to process all this information.
That's awesome. We're going to come back and talk about this TickUp Pick 6 competition, but I just want to explain to people before we take a break that this card you're talking about is part of an app. And correct. It is pretty cool, I have to say.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Well, we'll have much more with Jill Pack coming up. But in the meantime, Francis, can we get your phone number?
Of course. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com, too, to get more information. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a special guest with us, Joe Pack.
Welcome back, Joe. Okay, now let's get into this competition. All right, I want to win $50,000 if I'm a college student. $50,000 got my attention. Let's start by saying, by asking you, what makes this Tick Up Pick 6 competition different than a typical stock market game or some of the competitions you've seen in the past?
Yeah, so I think what makes us different is that we've embedded the competition into a platform that naturally helps you find your investments, right? So instead of saying, you know, find your best three stock picks and present them with, you know, no tools or framework, we are an entire platform that's built on helping you discover and learn more about stocks. So for us, it's that combination and accessibility that makes it much simpler. All you have to do is then download the app, select six stocks on the app, and you can use the app to find those six stocks. And it's as simple as that to set up. And I think one of the most important things in getting more engaged with the markets and investing and becoming more familiar is just starting and getting that exposure to it. And I think that from my personal experience, that happened to me when I was in college. And even though I wasn't good at it when I was in college, that exposure helped set me up for the platform down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. For somebody listening who thinks this is like you're picking your square on a football card, can you talk a little bit about the criteria that, so if I'm a college student and I'm wanting to win this contest and I pick my six stocks, how do I know what you're looking for as a winner? Is it just the person who makes the most money? Are there other things?
Right. So for the grand prize, it'll be based on the highest return, and we allow you to make a certain amount of changes over at certain intervals, and those details will be announced at a later date. But yes, you are primarily incentivized to seek the highest return. And while that may incentivize, you know, taking riskier stocks, for us, we think the first step is having more exposure and learning. What we'll also allow you to do, therefore, is then look at your portfolio and look how it performed on certain metrics that more professional analysts would look at. So for example, something like a Sharpe ratio, where you can see, actually, did I make this return with an excessive amount of risk, or did I make it with, you know, a limited amount of risk and I just chose, you know, really good stocks? So what we're trying to do is help familiarize the person with them, but we by no means believe that this is the one and only path that will take you towards, you know, becoming an investing prowess.
Wow. You know, it's amazing what you've put into this. But of course, my inquisitive mind, I'll say, I was going to say skeptical, but I'll say inquisitive. My inquisitive mind says, you know, $50,000 is not pocket change. Who's funding this? And what's the bigger goal behind this giveaway?
For us, it's a win-win situation. I think what we're trying to do is attract more attention to the app, and we're trying to find users who understand how useful that it can be. I think the most useful case for an app that helps you discover and learn more about stocks is a competition that requires you to discover and learn more about stocks. So for us, we believe that, you know, is mutually beneficial. And at the end of the day, we're not a brokerage. We're focused purely on discovery. So we have no incentive at all to, you know, have you invest money with us, or, you know, start investing in stocks in a, you know, in an unsafe or uneducated way. So what we've done is we formatted this competition. We've lined it up with our platform because we believe that our interests are aligned.
Yeah. So that was an important point. I think a very important point, because there's so many stock apps out there. So it's privately funded is what you're telling me.
That's correct. We first did our first capital raise at the end of last year. And this was done privately with angel investors. I mean, at the end of the day, the way that we make our money is having a lot of users and eventually being able to launch premium features, as well as then, you know, being able to share more fundamental features that can help you on along the way that some more advanced investors might like. But for the basic user, we believe, and my mission is for that to always be free.
I was just going to say it. It's my favorite price. I downloaded the app this morning to check it out.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it was fun. It was fun. You see that? Okay. And it was free. And entering this college student stock picking competition, the Pick Six, is free also to college students, correct?
Yes, completely free. As we spoke about a bit earlier, we are looking to expand this. And part of this expansion is that we realized, as I'm sure you have as well, is that financial literacy isn't just the problem that starts in college and goes away as you get older. I think I find many people, my peers in the 30s or younger in their 20s, who still get stuck in this place of where do I start? And it's always difficult to figure out that question. And I think the best way for me, again, is just having some exposure and slowly starting to learn and taking those first steps.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit more about what the college students are actually doing in this competition. Are they just picking stocks or is there more to it? How are they learning through this process?
So we are also launching a social side of it, which acts as a forum that allows people to share their ideas. And we will be very strict on the type of moderation that occurs in terms of the level of quality of discourse that occurs. So I think what you find is on a lot of these finance apps that you mentioned, a lot of the type of information that you get is, hey, buy this stock for no reason because it's going to go to the moon. For us, we believe that we want to set the bar higher in terms of where the type of discussion and information sharing being had. And I think one of that is being but is by leading by example. And I think I will be a regular contributor to the app, helping guide this is the things I'm considering, or these are stocks I'm looking at. And I think the way that people are very creative. They love to share information. I think we'll find, economic and finance students sharing what they're looking at and being able to share the stocks that they're picking, or, the type of analysis that they're doing. So we think that we believe that there will be a lot of organic content that makes its way onto the app.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I have a number of those platforms that I check out, and I'm always frustrated, to say the least, that people can just launch whatever thought is on their mind. Some people use it to manipulate things because they know they have newbies on the thread, and so they tell people to buy or sell, and they're really just trying to get their shares from them. It's pretty sad how that works. But speaking of social media, and Jess might weigh in on this. I haven't let Jess say anything today, but speaking of social media, what do you think of things like Reddit or TikTok that promote themselves as some sort of financial education source?
I think with any sort of tool that allows you to be able to reach a broader audience, you will always find good and bad. And I think that some resources are actually valuable. I think it's the same thing on who you trust to get your news or information from. I think you have to look into what is a person's background. Have they worked in this field? I think just because someone is on TikTok or Reddit, I wouldn't, write them off. And I think that you do find really thoughtful content on there. But at the same time, you have to, wade through a lot of misinformation to get there. And I think that's, it's not just, sticking with finance. I think that's with a lot of things based on social media, right? I think it's really hard to know what correct information is. So it takes that additional information. I think what we're looking to do is help on the moderation side, but at the end of the day, we can't tell you, if someone's investment thesis is wrong or right. I think that is subjective at the end of the day. So there will always be that part where that's why we believe that this tool is great, because you learn from yourself. Instead of saying, hey, I'm going to take whatever this influencer has told me, I'm learning the fundamentals and, the basis for investing myself so that I can decide what is, good and bad information.
Okay, so it's free, TikTok is free, and the competition is free to get in, but you're investing your own money, right? Like you're picking five stocks. The goal is to make the most that they win the grand prize, but you're still investing your own money in these stocks, correct?
No, so this is actually all done virtually. So the picking six stocks will be done on the app. It will be a virtual portfolio. So you're getting to practice absolutely risk-free, and you're
Oh,
starting to be
nice.
able to understand how things move. And actually, as we move this, as I was telling Francis a bit earlier, we are now actually going to expand this. We'll change the format slightly, and that's to be announced, but we realize that more people want to be involved. So just yourself, you'll be able to take part in this competition. I think it'd be a great way to learn and have fun, and honestly, catch up with some friends and make it a competition between yourselves as well.
Oh, fun. Now that I know I don't have to lose my own money, then I'm totally
Yeah.
in.
Yeah.
So,
That's
I mean,
great to
that's
hear.
one of the things that's so cool about it is it's free to download the app, right? I don't want to sound like a commercial because it's not what we do, but it's free to download the app. It's free to enroll, right, and compete, and
Yes.
it's virtual money. I mean, you got a shot if you do this well at making $50,000 in a grand prize or 15,000. I mentioned that, but we didn't talk about the team prize. There's a $15,000 team prize. What's that about?
So the team prize was about encouraging collaboration. Like you said, you need to learn. As part of this expansion, though, into making it more accessible for everyone, we're actually going to keep it with individuals only. So we're going to repurpose this prize money. And
Okay.
the reason for that is this is actually really funny. As we started marketing this, we realized that college students were actually gatekeeping the information about the competition and not sharing with each other so that they wouldn't
Really?
improve their chances of winning.
They
So,
want to win.
yes, yeah, so the entire team aspect or deciding to share it, that premise was proven falsely pretty quickly based on feedback. And as a small startup, we've got to listen to what people are saying, and we're adjusting that quickly. And yeah, I found that pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. You know, I just want to say that most of our listeners and viewers, well, many of them anyway, are parents of college-age students. What is something they could do this week to help their kids be more financially fit?
That's an interesting question. I think if I was doing this myself, I would give my child a $100 portfolio, put it in there and tell them to just try it out. And I think you learn so much more with a hands-on experience than you would in, a million lectures. And I think it's because with investing, you can't write in a textbook the perfect way to invest. Things are constantly changing. The market is changing. The economy is changing. And I think part of it is you have to live and experience it. And part of that is just getting hands-on experience. So that's what I would do. I don't think you need to have a lot. I think just any amount that, you would pay attention to, I think would be the way that I would start personally.
That's great. I can't believe that we're out of time already, but I just want to thank you again for joining us, Joe Pack. And if people want more
Thanks so much.
information about this,
So TICKUP.com, tickupapp.com.
you know, I hope that people will check this out, and we'll college students and parents will all look at this because it could be the spark that changes the way that they think about money or invest or think about their financial future. So thank you very much for coming on and sharing this with us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You
You bet.
Francis, let's get your phone number too if anybody has questions.
Oh yeah, nobody wants to talk to me now.
They all do.
413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.